Hello and welcome to the Politics Home podcast. I'm Matt Honeycomb Foster, the acting editor here at Politics Home. An almighty political row has erupted over the weekend after the Mirror and the Guardian reveal that Boris Johnson's most senior advisor made a 250-mile journey from London to Durham to stay with family during the nationwide coronavirus lockdown. The PM has defended Dominic Cummings, but he is now facing a mounting backlash from his own party and the opposition over that decision to stand by his man. Cummings, an enigmatic and strong-willed special advisor who spearheaded the Vote Leave Brexit campaign and has called for wide-ranging changes to the way Whitehall is run, has just given a dramatic statement in the Downing Street Rose Garden. Later I'll be speaking to Conservative commentator Tim Montgomery, Shadow Minister Wes Streeting and Liberal Democrat leader Ed Davey to discuss the political ramifications of the story, which shows no sign of going away. First up, though, I caught up with our intrepid political reporter, John Johnston, who's just been listening in to that statement from Cummings himself. John, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Enjoying a bank holiday off?
Yeah. Just what I wanted to do on my bank holiday is sit and watch Dominic Cummings.
Not just watch it, but transcribe it in full.
Transcribe it in full. At least he gets to sit out in the sun and enjoy himself, so.
We treat you right here, don't we? So I thought for our listeners, it would be helpful if we could just sort of step back and think about and kind of walk through what the issue is at stake here. Why is Dominic Cummings in the headlines again?
So this has all come about from The Guardian and The Mirror, who did a fantastic story, on Friday night into Saturday, essentially proving that Dominic Cummings had taken this 250-mile round trip to Durham to stay on his parents' farm, with kind of further allegations that he'd gone out for visits to a nearby town and that he had been spotted in the local area by people who live there. And then later that day, a further story that claimed that he had been spotted again in Durham after he had already returned to work. Now, Number 10 kind of were very, very insistent that that second trip was not true and really not willing to provide much detail on the initial story. And it's taken 4 days until this afternoon for us to actually get any kind of real detail from Number 10, or in this case from Dominic Cummings, about what actually happened.
So we've just had a pretty unprecedented statement from Dominic Cummings, who, of course, is he's an unelected advisor. He doesn't normally front up media appearances like a minister would. What did we learn from that statement in the Rose Garden at Number 10?
Well, I'm not sure we really learned a whole amount, to be honest. He's given a pretty detailed account of his movements over those days, explaining that the reason that he decided to take that trip was because his wife was ill and he feared that if he then fell ill, that there would be nobody to look after their young son. And therefore he made the judgment in what he claimed was within the guidelines of the lockdown rules to drive there so that if something happened to him and his wife, then his family were around them to look after his son. Again, he's completely vehemently denied this allegation that there was any kind of follow-up or second visit to Durham. But I really am not sure that this has provided many answers. I think it's probably, you know, given us more questions, really. There's a lot of criticism already of some of the things he has said around this. One of the initial things that he set out was that after he heard his wife was ill, that he returned home quickly because she said that she felt she was going to faint and that she was ill and she wasn't sure whether she had the virus. And after he got home and she started to feel a little bit better, he returned to work. Now, that in itself seems like it could be a breach of the lockdown rules because, you know, if he had travelled home and someone in his household was potentially ill with coronavirus, the government advice at that point was incredibly clear that you should then be self-isolating. And the second sort of big element of this is this trip that he made. He claims after the 14-day isolation period that he undertook in this house in Durham, that he took a kind of 30-minute drive to a local beauty spot to test whether his eyesight was up to the journey back to London. And people very rightly making the point, well, if you're worried and concerned about your driving and your eyesight, then the last thing you would do is pack your wife and young child into a car and take them for a 45-minute drive. So I just don't think that this is going to go away anytime soon. There's going to be further questions about this. Whether this sort of contrite statement will be enough to kind of steady the nerves of some of the Conservative MPs who have been, you know, getting a lot of anger from constituents about this, it, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Dominic Cummings has long been a critic of lobby journalism and of the media more generally. Did we have any points along those lines, any criticism of the press coverage of this? And was there any rebuttal to any of the kind of key points raised in that series of stories over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the main things that came across in the press conference is that he was essentially blaming the media for the public's angry response to this, saying that there was a lot of untrue reporting and that was the kind of basis for the public's, you know, outrage at what has happened. In terms of the kind of rebuttal of the stories, you know, he was very clear that the second trip didn't happen, but I don't really think that he provided much detail. He provided his kind of thinking on why some of these decisions were made and why he made the trip, but in terms of the kind of factual substance of the initial story, I don't think we kind of got anything new from him in that regard. Obviously, he explained that his son had become ill while they were in Durham and he was taken into hospital. But none of that really changes the fundamental point that he is being seen by the public as having taken a kind of approach to the rules that he claims was reasonable and within the guidelines, but kind of goes against the very spirit of the message, which was being given daily by the Prime Minister and ministers at that time, which is that you must stay at home, that there was no real kind of excuse for not doing that, that that was the critical message, that whatever happened, you stayed at home. And I don't think he's provided a convincing explanation for how his behaviour isn't kind of flouting that rule.
We also learned from Cummings at the press conference, the press statement rather, that he did not tell Boris Johnson initially that he'd made this decision to travel to Durham. Did he give an account for why he'd not informed his boss of this move?
Yeah, I think this is probably going to be something else that runs on. And now the ball is going to be very much in Boris Johnson's court to explain this. He kind of claimed that the Prime Minister is an incredibly busy person and that he was going through a lot and having to make a lot of difficult decisions. And therefore, he judged that this wasn't something that he needed to be bothered with at that moment in time when he made the decision. He then went on to explain that he had actually informed Boris Johnson that he was in Durham, but only after he was there and that the two of them were both at this point suffering from coronavirus and said that they were kind of so ill that they couldn't really remember the details of the conversation. And then subsequently, you know, he essentially said that they haven't talked about it since he returned until the story kind of appeared in the newspapers. So there's going to be a lot of questions now for the government about why they didn't tell us this earlier. Journalists were asking every single day in the daily number 10 briefing that we have with them, to tell us about what was going on with Dominic Cummings. And I wouldn't say that they were untruthful, but there was kind of glaring omissions in the details of this that they could have given us at that point that might have helped kind of clear the air a bit.
Obviously, the Prime Minister's been under a fair amount of criticism today over his backing for Dominic Cummings from people in his own party. We've seen Tory MP after Tory MP break ranks to call on Dominic Cummings to resign or be sacked. Do you think this statement in the Rose Garden will be enough to shut that down and for the circus to kind of move on? Or is this going to dominate for the week, do you think?
I've seen a few Tory MPs coming out kind of saying that they felt that it was a reasonable explanation and that we should move on. I think we're just going to have to wait and see whether that his kind of explanation was enough to kind of allay the fears that that they had had. I don't think this is going to go away. It, as I said, there's more questions now that I think need to be answered. And I think the pressure is going to stay on the government and Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson for the next few days. You know, Boris Johnson is very clearly supporting Dominic Cummings. I'm not sure whether, without new information, whether just the kind of public pressure and anger from other MPs will be enough to change his mind on that. But I think it's sort of too early to tell at the moment.
Responding to Boris Johnson's full-throated defence of his embattled adviser on Sunday night, Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer said, "If I was Prime Minister, I would have sacked Dominic Cummings by now." To get a flavour of the opposition's response to this crisis, they've been trying to dig into the detail and demand an independent investigation from the Cabinet Secretary. I spoke to Shadow Minister Wes Streeting. He's also the Labour MP for Ilford North. First up, Wes, what was your immediate reaction to the stories broken by The Guardian and The Mirror over the weekend?
I think probably the worst thing about this whole fiasco is the damage it's done to the most important thing of all, which is the government having clear public health messages and instructions that are well understood by the public and that the public abide by. And I think the problem with what Dominic Cummings has done is that he's so flagrantly broken the rules that, you know, and the Prime Minister's insistence that he's acted within the rules and with integrity, and the way in which Boris Johnson has personal credibility behind Dominic Cummings has really undermined that public health campaign. I think it would have been, I think, better if they had come forward and said, look, Dominic Cummings has broken the rules. He did what he thought was best by his family. He's apologised, and we want to draw a line under it. Now, obviously, there are lots of people out there who would still be angry, I think justifiably so, actually. But at least it would have acknowledged that, you know, what he did was wrong, and it would have reinforced the importance of everyone else abiding by the rules. Instead, we've ended up in this awful situation where people are now saying, well, it's one rule for the government's advisers and another rule for everyone else. And I think that's really undermined public confidence in the government's public health campaign.
You touched on it there, but in the press conference on Sunday, Boris Johnson said that Cummings acted legally, responsibly and with integrity. And the message coming from Number 10 is that this was a father in an extremely difficult situation who needed to travel to find what Boris Johnson called the right type of childcare. It doesn't sound like you're particularly convinced by that case, Wes.
I don't think people are convinced. I think parents would understand some of the challenges that the restrictions have placed on issues like childcare during the lockdown. But I think, particularly given he's got family in London, I don't think people understand why a round trip to Durham was necessary. I think there are big questions remaining about how many visits there were to Durham. And it certainly doesn't explain what now seems to be a pretty well-evidenced trip to Barnard Castle, which I'm sure is a really lovely destination. In fact, I'm sure I'm not the only one who is planning a post-lockdown trip to go and see what all the fuss is about. But the point is that, you know, and I'm sure I'm not the only MP, you know, in this position. We've had so many difficult conversations in recent weeks with people who haven't been able to attend family funerals because they decided to do the right thing and abide by the restrictions, who haven't been able to be at the bedside of relatives who are seriously ill, in some cases terminally ill, who've experienced real loss of their livelihoods and impact on their businesses, who haven't been for months. And people have made those sacrifices because the government told them that it was important, that it was essential to saving lives. I mean, I think one of the most, you know, the most cringeworthy things about this whole thing was the sight of the Prime Minister standing at the same podium where we've heard, you know, Matt Hancock and other senior members of the government reinforce time after time that everyone abiding by these restrictions is absolutely essential to saving lives. And yet, yesterday, Boris Johnson just drove a coach and horse through all of those comments and basically said it's one rule for us and another rule for you lot. And I've had to send out a message to my constituents today saying, I totally understand why people would be angry. And I understand the instinct that might lead to some people saying, well, you know, frankly, sod it then in that case. If they're not abiding by the rules, why should I? But the point is, we've all got to abide by the rules. We've all got to play our part. And the worst thing that the country could do now is to follow this terrible example and reverse all of the progress that's been made.
Now, your leader, Keir Starmer, is calling on the Cabinet Secretary, Mark Sedwill, to launch an investigation into this. What do you guys want that probe to answer?
I think we've got to lay out the basic facts of the matter in terms of the number of visits that Dominic Cummings made, why he was there, what he was doing while he was there, this question of the, you know, day trip to Barnard Castle. And I think we need to see the conduct of Dominic Cummings laid out alongside the very clear instructions that the government have been issuing to everyone else. And I think we need to, you know, basically see whether or not the Prime Minister's right when he says that Dominic Cummings has obeyed the rules, obeyed the law and acted with integrity. I really honestly don't know how Boris Johnson said that with a straight face yesterday. And I think the damage he has done, not just to his own credibility, which I care less about, but the damage he has done to public trust and confidence in the government and its public health messaging during a national crisis, I think is wholly irresponsible. And I think it's one thing to have said, I stand by my advisor. He's done something wrong. He's admitted he's wrong. He's apologised. I've accepted his apology. We'll move on. You know, not everyone would be happy about that. Not everyone would wear it. But I think it certainly would have, you know, people would have, you know, said fair enough in more cases than they are now. It's quite another to have stood there at the podium in number 10, basically lying to the country in the way that Boris Johnson did. I just find it extraordinary. And to have wheeled out senior members of the government, including the health secretary, to abide by this rule breaking, I thought was astonishing. How on earth the police are supposed to, enforce the rules, and how these fines would stand up in court when you've got the Attorney General basically saying that what he did was OK, I don't know. I thought it was interesting, actually, and notable that the one member of the government that I haven't yet seen defending Dominic Cummings is the Home Secretary. And presumably that's because Priti Patel understands, as the person responsible for law and order in the country, that it would not be a good look for a Home Secretary to back rule breakers. And I thought one of the other shameful episodes of this whole mess was when the number 10 operation said that Dominic Cummings' family hadn't been spoken to by the police, even after the Durham Constabulary said they had done. I mean, they were effectively calling the police liars. And, you know, I'm afraid when it comes to trust, I would trust what Durham Police says a lot more than number 10. And again, I think it's, you know, this is why I think Mark Sedwill does need to get involved, because, you know, who in number 10 is issuing these lines? Is this really the position of the government? I mean, I just think the whole thing is a terrible mess, and also a huge distraction from the most important thing of all, which is the coronavirus crisis. We're not over this crisis yet. We're not through the woods. We've still got, lots of people in hospital and people who are, you know, affected by this. And we've got the economic fallout as well. So we're not through the woods on this crisis yet. And that's why I just don't understand why the government appears to have thrown its whole effort to tackle the virus under a bus this weekend, all to defend one advisor. I think it's extraordinary.
Now, Dominic Cummings obviously has long been a divisive figure for some. He was a key player in the Vote Leave campaign. What would you say to people who feel that some of this is just the kind of usual critics of the PM's top advisor trying to, you know, latch onto something and get rid of him?
Well, of course, it's true to say that Dominic Cummings has a higher profile than most advisors. And it's also fair to say that, his critics aren't just, you know, Labour people. He's got plenty of critics within the Conservative Party because of his, unusual style of interacting with people and his contempt for MPs, including Conservative ones. I think all I would say to that, and anyone who thinks this is just sort of a partisan knockabout, is that, you know, the Labour Party has bent over backwards during this crisis, and its new leadership has bent over backwards to try and back the government and to support them wherever we can, because we recognise the most important thing is tackling the coronavirus. And we've stuck to that all the way through. And where we've made criticism to the government, we've tried to couch them constructively. We've tried to offer alternative. And generally speaking, that dialogue between the Labour shadow cabinet and the cabinet has been good and constructive. We don't make these criticisms lightly. And let's not also forget that there are a number of, I think, very principled Conservative MPs from right across the spectrum of the Conservative Party, actually, who've spoken out in recent days, from ardent pro-Brexiteers like Steve Baker right through to, you know, Conservative MPs who voted Remain. This is not a referendum issue. This isn't a Brexit issue. This is actually an issue about public trust and confidence in the government's ability to tackle the crisis and upholding the same rules for everyone, not allowing government advisers to cherry pick which public health rules they follow and which they don't, when actually our actions can put other people at risk, which is the fundamental point here.
Also, quick out of the traps in demanding an independent investigation into Dominic Cummings' movements were the Liberal Democrats. Now, they are no big fans of Dominic Cummings and his pet political project, Brexit, which they have long opposed as a avowedly pro-Remain party. I spoke to the Liberal Democrat leader, Ed Davey, and he told me that this wasn't really about Brexit. This is about a public health message that he feels is being undermined by those actions.
Well, I have compassion for any person who gets this illness and has loved ones who they need to care for. However, in the guidelines, it doesn't say follow your instincts. It says follow the rules. And that's what many people have followed. And many people have been in similar situations. Many people have had to make personal sacrifices. Millions of people actually have made sacrifices, changing their daily lives, not seeing loved ones, not going to weddings, not going to funerals even. And when it comes to the care of Mr. Cummings' child, I think most people will make two observations. First of all, that it doesn't look like he entrusted his child into anyone else. He was actually caring for himself, which he could, of course, have done in London. And secondly, even if that had proven not to be the case, he had friends and relatives in London. He lived in an area where there was plenty of people who in the volunteer sector, the local social services, who could have assisted if that really was the problem. So I'm afraid his explanation doesn't stack up. Looks as if he's not been truthful. So I'm afraid it's making it even worse. And that's why I think I've been getting, I know that other MPs have been getting, emails and texts and messages from constituents who are frankly fuming.
Were you surprised at the degree to which Boris Johnson came out in support of Dominic Cummings yesterday? You know, the Prime Minister throwing his weight behind an advisor in that way.
I was surprised, given what we knew about the situation and given what the Prime Minister said. It seems extraordinary, given that the Prime Minister is actually responsible for any special advisor. The ministerial code is very clear. It isn't like a normal civil servant post. It's the Prime Minister who's responsible for his own special advisors. And for him to do that actually puts his own reputation, his own judgment completely on the line here. I think that shows a lack of judgment, given what we know, given the evidence, whether it's from the police, from the public, and what we're hearing from people around the country.
Now, you've been in government, in the cabinet as energy secretary. You know, special advisors are always influential. They're often seen as kind of real kind of power players in Whitehall. Do you believe Dominic Cummings has played too big a role in the current government? Do you think he's too influential as an advisor?
Well, I think it's quite difficult to say if you're not actually in the government. So that's what my experience of government tells me, is you can't actually be sure unless you're witnessing it. So all my evidence comes from third hand, effectively, from what people to say, what people write in the newspapers. And there certainly seems to be a view that power has gone into Number 10 and into the office of Dominic Cummings in a way never seen before. People will remember that Sajid Javid resigned as Chancellor because apparently on Dominic Cummings' insistence, the team around the Chancellor was basically having to be chosen and being responsible to Number 10. And that was unprecedented. Normally, a minister, particularly as senior as the Chancellor Exchequer, would have their team of advisors responsible to them. And so it did seem to me that something has materially changed under Dominic Cummings. And I think actually it leads to a weaker government, because what you want in government is the centre to be challenged and the centre to be able to challenge other departments. That's a healthy tension, actually. And when it's not there, you can get some serious mistakes. And when we come to back to coronavirus, as we ought to, given that's the hugely serious crisis we're all trying to deal with, I think the government has been pretty shambolic. And I think it could have done with more of a challenge to the decisions that have been taken, presumably by people like Dominic Cummings.
What do you think Number 10 can do to put this right at this point? I mean, you sort of touched on it there. Does Cummings need to go to get this right, or can there be some sort of structural reform or series of changes that gets a grip on this again?
Well, if I was the Prime Minister, I'd have sacked Dominic Cummings 2 days ago. Because we are in this national crisis, we can't have mixed messages. Particularly something as serious as public health. But if you're talking about the wider point, I actually think the handling of the crisis has shown the weakness of the government that Boris Johnson has constructed, not just particularly pointing at individual ministers, but the way it is shaped and the way it is centrifugal around Dominic Cummings. And I suppose that's why the Prime Minister is so unwilling to see him go, because he's built his government around the views and the ideas of Dominic Cummings. But that's the Prime Minister's problem. The Prime Minister, I think, is proving not very good at the job.
Now, obviously, it's hard to talk about any story at the moment without the kind of wider, cultural schism of Brexit that frames a lot of things in the country at the moment. What would you say to people who think this is just part of that Brexit culture war, that people who are, Remainers who are annoyed that Dominic Cummings led the Vote Leave campaign are just gunning for him at this point?
Well, I think that's not true. This is completely unrelated to Brexit. It's about COVID. It's about public health. We've had nearly 40,000 people die. And that's not a matter for some sort of public school debate. It's an absolute tragedy. And we've got the highest death toll in Europe. And we've seen tragedies, particularly in our care homes, where it looks like government policy was, well, just protect the NHS and who cares about the care homes? And that's frankly been a dereliction of duty. So this is people trying to push it away and say, it's all to do with Brexit, are talking nonsense. We have a national crisis completely unrelated to Brexit. Now, as it so happens, as a Liberal Democrat, you won't be surprised to hear me say that if we do Brexit, it will make the economic catastrophe of COVID even worse. And that if anyone had any common sense, they've been seeking an extension of the transition arrangements. Indeed, I put an amendment down to the emergency bill in mid-March. I've presented a piece of legislation to do just because Liberal Democrats believe that Brexit is hugely damaging and we couldn't think of a worse time to do it. But that is a related issue to the question of Dominic Cummings' suitability, given how much he's undermined the public health messaging of the Prime Minister himself, which, let's remember, was stay at home.
Now, you might well expect Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs to be rubbing their hands with glee at this latest row engulfing Number 10. But perhaps less predictable was the backlash from Conservatives. Tim Montgomery is a former advisor to Number 10. He is the founder of the Conservative Home website and the Centre for Social Justice think tank. He's been deeply critical of the way the government has handled this crisis, and I spoke to him earlier on a slightly crackly line. Tim, last night you said you were really embarrassed to have ever backed Boris Johnson for high office because of this row. Those are really strong words. Why has this case brought you to that place, and what do you make of the way it's been handled?
Well, we've all, I think, had stories from, you know, either directly or indirectly during lockdown of people who've made enormous sacrifices in order to abide by the government's rules. And actually, as the story about Dominic Cummings was breaking, I heard from a friend about a neighbour who was 91 years old and had hung herself because, you know, of the isolation. She couldn't see her wider family.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, an extreme example, a horrendous example of what people have done because they've wanted to abide by what the government has said was necessary in order to stop the spread of coronavirus. And for the Prime Minister's own, you know, senior advisor to travel across the country with COVID symptoms to be close to relatives who are in the high-risk category. And then there's not even to be any contrition, no apology, but a sense from the Prime Minister that, you know, he was doing the right thing, that he was obeying his instincts. Well, we've all been trying to avoid obeying our instincts, and we've been trying to obey the rules. And I've privately, over quite a sustained period, been trying to talk to the Prime Minister and some of his advisers about some of the weaknesses I saw at first hand in the Downing Street operation, to complete lack of any success. And I'm afraid, Matt, I just sort of bubbled over with annoyance this week.
Of course, Tim, you've advised Prime Ministers before, you've advised Number 10 before. What do you think the reasoning is in Number 10 now for keeping him in post? Is this just a question of loyalty? Is the role he plays so important in Number 10?
Well, definitely his role is massively important. And, you know, I have a lot of admiration for Dominic Cummings, and lots of the things that I believe in politics I share with Dominic. And, you know, we used to regularly have curries together, and, you know, over very recent years. And on Brexit, on the general election victory last December for the Conservative Party, you know, he wasn't a peripheral figure. He was central. He was instrumental. He's made things happen. But as so often is the case, you know, sometimes I think success can go to the head. And I think there's been an arrogance. There's been a control freakery evident in the way the Prime Minister and Dominic Cummings have behaved. I think a good government would have the best cabinet ministers in place, people with different opinions, Jeremy Hunt, Sajid Javid, Julian Smith. There'd be advisers in Number 10 who openly were disagreeing with Prime Ministerial and Dominic Cummings' decisions. Ultimately, they would, you know, when a decision's taken, they'd pipe down and they'd, you know, play the collective responsibility role. But there should be real debate, and that isn't happening in the government at the moment. There's a shortcutting of process, which I've witnessed, just a lack of seriousness. And in times which couldn't be more serious, that's a massive problem.
You talked there about that sort of lack of challenge. We saw some cabinet ministers come out to support Dominic Cummings on Saturday. How do you think those cabinet ministers who defended him after the initial story on Friday night will be feeling now?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been in touch with any of the cabinet ministers who tweeted on Saturday. I have been in touch with cabinet ministers who didn't tweet, and didn't tweet precisely because they were worried that neither the Prime Minister nor the Downing Street operation really got to the bottom of Dominic Cummings' story. And I think it is incredible for the likes of Gavin Williamson and Grant Shapps, you know, to be put up either at the Down press conference or on, you know, major television radio interviews without having actually spoken to Dominic Cummings to establish the facts to their own satisfaction, to have asked questions that they were going to be asked by Andrew Marr or Justin Webb or whoever. And there seems to be almost like a fear of Dominic Cummings stalking the government, perhaps not just stalking cabinet ministers, but stalking the prime minister as well. A lack of willingness to face up to this guy and ask him the tough questions that need to be asked.
Now those who support Dominic Cummings will say, look, this is a man who's helped the Conservatives deliver a long-held dream in Brexit, a substantial Tory majority. He's done that by pushing against conventional wisdom. He's clearly rubbed some people up the wrong way in doing that. I mean, is there any sense that some of his Conservative critics might be settling old scores here, Tim?
I'm sure that's, you know, partly the case. And we've all, you know, I've been on the wrong end of his, you know, his briefings in recent times. And people who want to take the view that I and others are acting out of sort of a sense of will take that view. And the people I admire most in this debate, you know, are people like Ian Dale and Julia Hartley Brewer, who are clearly, whatever their views, very strong supporters, for example, of Brexit, but are saying, I think on the behalf of the average voter who's obeyed the lockdown rules and is seeing a chief advisor to the prime minister not obey the lockdown rules, and they're saying, this is just not on. And, you know, we have far too much, I think, football club journalism in this country at the moment, where if you're on the side of the Brexit debate, for example, or the Tory side, you cheer for the Tories and the Brexiteers, regardless of what they do. And I think we will only, and it's true on the other side as well, I think we will only start to restore public faith in journalism and the political process generally, if there are more journalists and politicians willing to say, no, this is my side getting it wrong, and I'm going to call it out. And I'm very glad that I think at the last time of counting, 19 Conservative MPs have had the courage to stand up and say, no, this conduct from Dominic Cummings isn't acceptable.
Can those MPs do much more than sort of signal their anger at the moment, Tim? Might we see more kind of formal action or more sustained pressure there? Is this just a case of kind of piling pressure on number 10 in the public arena?
I think it's difficult to see their concerns on this occasion, you know, forcing Dominic Cummings to exit. I think we'd need to see some new information, some extra information, for the Prime Minister's position to be shifted. And now he was, you know, to go on primetime television at a press conference and declare your support for your advisor. Sort of odd, really, in a way. It's normally the advisor that's the shield to the Prime Minister rather than the Prime Minister's shield to the advisor. But the Prime Minister has been so emphatic in his support for Dominic Cummings. I think the Tory MPs' calls will have perhaps an effect on public opinion, but I don't think they will shift the Prime Minister. But, you know, over time, these things make a difference. And the Prime Minister is using up capital at a rapid rate at the moment.
Tim, before I let you go, is there anything the PM can do to win you back over at this point? What would he need to do to make this right in your mind?
Well, he doesn't need to win me back over. For start, what do I matter? But also, you know, I want him to succeed. I want the lockdown lifted and the economy restarted. I want Brexit I want to be proved, you know, wrong in my doubts about his operation and his machine. I want this government to succeed from the bottom of my heart. I'm just worried that so long as there's this arrogance at the heart of number 10, the sense that the Conservative Party isn't serious about treating everyone the same. You know, it's always been the Conservative Party's weakness that it's been seen as the party of the rich, the party of the elites. It's something that Dominic Cummings has traded on, that he was going to overturn this. But if the Conservative Party and the Boris Johnson operation start acting as if they play by different rules, then I'm afraid the appeal that the Conservative Party had to those red wall seats in the north and to former Labour voters will dissolve as quickly as it saw the Tories to victory last year.
Well, that's all we've got time for on the Politics Home podcast this week. Thank you very much to all my guests for turning up and battling some technical gremlins to do so. Always a bit of a challenge to do these podcasts during lockdown, which is why it makes it even more wonderful when you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts. You can stay up to date with everything that's going on in politics by going to politicshome.com. I've been Matt Honeycomb-Foster, acting editor here at Politics Home. Have a great one. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you again soon.